Hello, Rachel.
Hello, Philip. How are you doing?
Well, it's interesting because I've realized we always start these things, "Hello, how are you?" And actually, we are both, as you can hear, very much under the weather, coughing galore. So we may end up having to mute ourselves from time to time in this little pre-chat.
When you're listening, just imagine that this was probably a 2-hour recording distilled down into about 3 minutes, just in coughing.
And if you actually take the recording of all of our separate coughs, you could put together Havana Gila.
Well, what is the most Jewish thing that's happened to you recently, apart from discussing your health with anyone who happens to ask you how you're doing?
I think actually discussing my health with anyone who's subscribed for the very benefit of hearing me talk about my health is the most Jewish thing of the week. But no, I've succumbed lately to something I thought I'd avoid, but in the end, I decided I needed to just really get into it and start watching it at least. And that is the reality show The Traitors. Do you know of what I speak?
I don't know how to reply in a Shakespearean way. For some reason, you've asked it. But yeah,
Yeah,
we have watched
just say
Traitors.
yes, my liege.
I've watched, obviously, being me, I've watched The Traitors UK and Australia and USA. I've watched them all.
Yeah, I thought you might have. So I never watched it, and enough people convinced me I should at least try it. There's something about when you're a stand-up comedian and you want to talk about zeitgeisty type things on stage, or at least be able to reference them, it's useful to at least dip into these things. So I decided just to watch it. I sort of fast-forwarded bits of it because I didn't need to watch all the tasks and everything else, but it was fascinating. And the thing I was most fascinated about, and this is why it sort of makes it the most Jewish thing, is it's basically like an extreme version of a game I used to play when we were in youth groups called Mafia. So if you've not seen The Traitors, what it is, a group of people have turned up at a stately home in Scotland, and Claudia Winkleman, who hosts it, decides which of them is going to be a traitor, which of them is going to be a faithful. And if you're a traitor, you get to murder people in the night, not actually murdering them, obviously, although I think this would be a great setting for an Agatha Christie. And it feels like the first part of an episode of Black Mirror as well.
Yeah,
But
I don't want to be too spoilery, but in this series, there is an incident where somebody does get put in a coffin.
okay, do they get out the coffin up? Don't, no spoilers, no spoilers. Anyway, so they're playing this game and they can kill someone in the night and they then are out the game. And then during the next day, the rest of the people that are still alive need to decide who they think might be one of the traitors. And then at the end of the day, they vote them off. And if they're correct, then they've got rid of a traitor. And if they're not correct, they've got rid of one of their own. It's very intense. It's a bit too intense, if I'm honest. The thing I find most fascinating about it is how emotional people are getting. I mean, they're crying when someone turns up at breakfast. They're crying. It's absolutely ridiculous.
The
When we
breakfast look
play,
amazing. I mean, I'd be emotional about that breakfast 100%.
oh, I agree. Except I imagine they're all staying in the local travel lodge, having whatever they're having, and they just come together for this breakfast, this feast. But when we played it as kids in the youth groups, they put pieces of paper in a hat, and on the paper it was either written M for murderer, D for detective, and then the rest were just blank. And you picked them out, and then you were either a murderer, and there were, I think, two or three murderers, maybe, depending on numbers. And if you picked out the D, you were a detective. Again, there might have been more than one. Everyone then had to close their eyes. The murderers wake up, choose who they're going to kill, close their eyes. Whoever dies is then notified by whoever is running the game. The detectives can wake up and sort of discuss who they think it might be, and they sort of have to veer people towards voting off the person they think was the murderer. And if they get it right, fantastic. If they don't get it right, it carries on. So exactly that sort of game we played in the Jewish youth groups. And there was no logic to it. You picked your thing out of a hat, and that was it. You were a murderer or a detective or nothing. But when you were asked to justify why you weren't a murderer, because you could defend yourself if you were accused before voting took place, it was like, "I would never murder anyone. I've been good all my life. I've done this, I've done that. I'm the most giving. I give to charity." It's like, right, but you could still pick a piece of paper out of a hat that has no bearing on any of that. So it's such a random thing. And I know Claudia interviewed them and psychologically profiled them, I guess, but it's so intense. And by the end of the series, they've accumulated an amount of money that either goes to the remaining traitors or to the faithfuls. But some of their reactions are just so overly dramatic. And all it is a game we used to play at RSY.
What was the prize at RSY? Because presumably it wasn't £100,000 or whatever.
I imagine prize was you got to go into lunch first, because we only ever seemed to play it when we were delayed going to lunch. No, I mean, there was nothing. There was no prize pot. We didn't do that on RSY. Anyway, I've got that off my chest, which, to be fair, is the most painless thing I've got off my chest this week. So how about you, Rachel? What's the most Jewish thing that's happened to you this week?
Well, Philip, what has happened is my husband and I decided yesterday to binge watch the brilliant Jewish series Kid Sister, which I highly recommend to everyone. It's written by Simone Nathan. It stars her. It's such a funny, clever, good show. And also a way of seeing Orthodox representation in a mainstream sitcom, which is amazing. So we watched that. And there's a scene in it where her mum has taken her to the doctors and they're discussing boundaries. And the mum was saying how she and her daughter were in the same boundary. And then the daughter was demonstrating that, in fact, no, everyone has their own individual boundaries. And the mum said, I don't like that. I much prefer it if we're in one. And she does like a gesture of boundarying the two of them together. And Mark and I looked at each other and we realised that that is exactly how I feel about my children. That I feel like we should be within one boundary where I'm involved in every aspect of their life. I'm in constant contact with them. In fact, if they could spend their entire 24 hours a day, 7 days a week in the same room as me so that I know they're there, they're okay, I can feed them, I can make sure they're fine, I think that probably wouldn't even be enough. Yeah, it was that beautiful moment of recognition between a husband and wife, parents of the same children, when they realise that one of them is a full-on Jewish mother and there's nothing you can do about it. So it was kind of gorgeous.
I guess at some point you've just got to admit defeat on these things and go, this is who I am. There's no fighting it.
No, let's embrace it. But we're talking about Jewish families. This week's episode with Mike Scheer, comedian, actor, writer, tutor, does lots of different things, has really, really interesting and unusual family backstory that's kind of almost the opposite of Carrie's last week, where she didn't know she was Jewish till a certain age. And he was like full on brought up as a mega Jew for a number of years. And then the family went a different direction.
I say, I love the thought of a mega Jew. It's like you got a mega bus, just one mega Jew traveling everywhere.
Traveling everywhere, doing everything. But I thought it was really interesting, particularly to hear the story about the question mark over the origins of his father in a very Star Warsy way. And also the weird story of his bar mitzvah.
Yes, that and the offer you made him is worth listening to this episode for alone.
We should say that there are some grown-up words used in this episode, so maybe don't listen to it out loud in synagogue.
So sit back and enjoy the show. Hello, I'm Philip Simon.
And I'm Rachel Krieger. We are two Jewish comedians.
I'm Reform, and in my youth group, we played a game called Mafia, which is a watered-down version of hit TV show The Traitors.
And I'm Orthodox, and in my youth group, the only traitors we knew of were those who came with us just for Israel tour and then went back to their old friends afterwards.
This show is the audio equivalent of The Traitors. Full of twists and turns, the littlest of things could lead to a massive falling out, and we often start crying for no earthly reason.
In each episode, we chat to our favourite Jews about their lives and experiences growing up and how much Jewishness plays a part. Are they faithfuls or faithless?
Welcome to Jew Talking to Me.
Let's introduce our guest. He is a Canadian comedian, actor and script coach. It's Mike Scheer. Hello.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Hi, Mike. You're How are you welcome. Doing?
Hi, I'm good. Yeah, I'm doing all right. I'm three coffees in. the day is starting to creak to life for me.
Excellent.
So regular listeners to our podcast will know we always like to find out how our guests self-define as Jews. You'll know that Rachel's Orthodox and I'm Reform. So, Mike, what kind of a Jew are you?
I was thinking about this. I mean, I talk about this in my act, but it's like I was more Jewish in the first 8 years of my life than I have ever been since then. Until actually, Rachel, I connected with you over here and you had me kind of doing Jewish events and all this kind of stuff. And that was the first time in years that I've been brought back into it. So I would say I'm in it, but I'm like an outsider Jew.
An outsider
Is that a thing?
Jew.
Is that one? I'm an outsider Jew. I'm in the outside kind of looking in and picking bits out. One of them being the right to do jokes about being Jewish.
Fair enough. I love the idea that I brought you back to the fold. That's not generally the impact I have on people.
You realize she's now taking this as a win that she will be bragging about for some time. And I'm going to have to start finding people to Jewify.
Yeah, that's it. That's the whole point of the podcast, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really just a mass conversion course. Reformed Orthodox.
So, like, you say you were most Jewish for the first 8 years of your life. What do you mean, yeah. What do you mean by that?
So I do this joke about it that came from a conversation I was having with an old friend of mine about this. Basically, I come from, like, an immigrant family from here.
Who doesn't?
But still counts. But I was like first generation Canadian and stuff. So my mom is from a very traditional Jewish background in Manchester, from Cheetham Hill, from back in the day. And she had a thing when we were kids. I think she was kind of like, okay, I'm going to make these kids Jewish and like recreate kind of my household a little bit that I grew up in. And then it was just kind of abandoned like later in life. Like, and I still don't really know why that is. But, you know, I do this joke about how I was circumcised, but I didn't get a bar mitzvah. That's my experience.
And so, what, like, do I always say when you say that, Mike?
You'll do a bar mitzvah for me.
I know. I've offered you so many times. I'll make your bar mitzvah. The whole thing, to fill in on, call up to the Torah, a kiddush afterwards, fish bowls, everything.
Well, did I tell you I had one on the side of the road when I first moved here? I was in Manchester. And these kind of Jews were like, one guy was from Brooklyn and one was from LA, and they were like hanging out by the side of the road in a camper van doing drive-by bar mitzvahs. So like, I was riding my bike past and they were like, hey buddy, are you Jewish? And I saw they had a bottle of Jameson's. I was like, I am, yeah. If you want to talk, like, let's have some whiskey. And then we ended up hanging out, and they were like, and I was like, yeah, I never heard of bar mitzvah. And they're like, let's do it right now. And they did it with the tefillin and all that. And then we took a photo with them, and that was it. I told my mom after, and she was really angry.
Much worse if it's the other way around, that you were bar mitzvahed but not circumcised. And there's just on the street. These guys with a scalpel going, hey, you're Jewish? Let's find out.
Yeah, let's do it. Yeah. That's indeed would be worse. But yeah, so I was studying for the bar mitzvah. Like, I went to Hebrew school for a bit when I was like 9, 10 years old. So I did like a few weeks of Hebrew school. We used to go to shul when I was a kid, like when I was like little. So that, all those things. And then eventually she just stopped kind of forcing us to go to temple and stuff. And then it just all... But once the kids in my school found out that I was Jewish, they started to kind of bully me for it. Like, they called me Heeb and, you know, I don't know if you're saying these words on this podcast, but all those words. Okay. But I didn't know, you know, it's like the classic thing that kids say is like, you didn't know about racism. You didn't really know what it was, or you didn't know about we discriminate against people for certain reasons. Like, you don't. So I never really understood it. So one of the first jokes I ever did was about being called Heeb and not knowing what it meant and thinking it was an acronym for handsome badass and all this. But it was like, yeah. So that's another reason why I kind of feel like I've earned my stripes as a Jew, is because I did get the abuse for it at an early age. So I have all the trauma that you can expect being like a new world Jew.
I'm gutted that the only prize you got for it was famous then, like 25 years later.
Yeah. I mean, it was fun. They were kind of fun. They smelled bad, like in their camper van, because I think they were living in it. But it smelled like peanut butter and stuff, but it was cool. Yeah.
I think it's interesting that the trauma of kids calling you names is a connection you have to Judaism, because even the most atheist of Jews is still too Jewish for someone who doesn't like Jews.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, this school that I was at that time, they were like proper white trash kids. You know, like when you have kids of that age, like they're just copying what they hear in the house purely. Mm-hmm. Like, so, you know, they're just saying shit that they've heard their uncles and their dads and everyone who's had, you know. So it was like, it's interesting. Like you say, like they're just being a conduit for the racism and the sort of toxicity of the elders in their house. But no one knows. I didn't know what they were saying to me. They don't know what they're saying to me.
Yeah.
You know, it is a fun dynamic.
It brings us all together, though.
Yeah. Indeed.
So was it something that happened after they found out you were Jewish? So they'd been friends with you for years and then suddenly went, now we have a new name for him.
I was kind of relatively new at the school, I think, because it was a new school for me. But it was like, I had known them for a bit Yeah, it wasn't like a fresh in the school, hey, here's a Jew. It was like I'd known them for a bit. And then I think I mentioned it, which is kind of fun because there's no other way they would have known. So it's kind of funny. Maybe it was because I was going to Hebrew school or something now that I think about it. Maybe I mentioned that or whatever because it was at that time. But yeah, a lot of the Jews in my neighborhood were like dark complexion, except for me. So like I could have gotten away with it. I could have, you know, passed as one of them if I hadn't said anything. It's kind of funny. And then there was like, you know, years later, I went to a comedy school and there were like some kids there who were trying to be funny, who were writing swastikas on the board, thinking it was
funny. That's hilarious.
But I always had like, my experience of Jewishness has always been, I don't have a lot of fun experiences, if you know what I mean? So that's why I'm saying those gigs and stuff and like being around Jews having fun, like I never really saw a whole lot of that. It was like all the cultural things I would go to was like temple, where it was like, you know, super boring in there as a kid. You're just sitting there and you're just like, oh my God. So we had a local synagogue that a lot of the guys who I'm friends with now are Jewish from my neighborhood, weirdly. And we all went to this shul together and they used to have a tree at the front that we all used to like hold on to and like walk around. And that was like how we stopped ourselves from boredom. But yeah, like we all did it. So we didn't know each other. So we all have that connective tissue, which is fun.
Literally the tree of life.
The tree of life. Yeah.
Beautiful.
We've talked a lot about your past, Mike, but what is the most Jewish thing that's happened to you recently?
I mean, I think that it's this thing that is going on at this exact moment, which is this escalating conflict over in the Middle East, which is permeating more of our everyday life here in London. Mm. And there are things every once in a while that kind of awaken my feeling of Jewish identity. Because like I said, like I don't have a big family. I have some Jewish family here in the UK, but I don't really see them a whole lot. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not part of my daily life. And they are actually quite Jewish in their practice and culturally, but I don't really see them that often. Like maybe a couple of times a year, really. You know, and I live with my girlfriend who's Greek. So she's a heathen Greek. So I'm not reminded a lot of the Jewishness, except at this moment, this kind of landscape we're living in at the moment. It's kind of inciting a lot of Jewish identity contemplation in me, if that makes sense. Hmm. Is that what you asked? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it is. Like, how's it manifesting for you directly?
It's manifesting in me realizing I have to kind of manage, because I'm having a visceral emotional reaction to stuff that I see online or that I see on the newspaper or that I might see on the street, which is not a way that I really like to live, because I do get quite riled up easily. So I've kind of learned to manage my environment to be in a way that doesn't really make me kick off, if you know what I mean. But this thing is like, you can't escape it at the moment. And so I have a mix of like, don't get angry about that. Don't get wound up about that. But at the same time, I'm like, you gotta represent though. You know, you can't just let everything go. So it's manifesting also with friends and with people who, like, you know, whenever one of these big global things is going on, I'm usually quite able to detach from it and be like, oh yeah, I think that is bad or that is bad. But this is the first time it's been something that's really grabbed me in my gut.
Right.
Where I feel like I do have to chime in and make judgments and make calls on people, whether I'm not going to speak to them anymore or block them or mute them, you know, just to protect my own, I guess the word we use now is mental health. Yeah, it's manifested like that. But it keeps reminding me that I am part of this community, even if I'm in the outsider who's getting circumcised in a van in Manchester. Even if I'm that guy, you know, this is still my community.
Is it something that you've noticed happening just online, or have you like had personal, direct, in-person experiences? You mentioned that you talk on stage about being Jewish. So is it something you've noticed from audiences, from colleagues?
Okay, so here in the comedy world, basically in my act, I do a joke about not looking Jewish. And what I mean when I say I don't look Jewish, I mean that I don't have the darker complexion that a lot of my friends or people who have, I mean, none of us actually, so this is a bad example. but you know, I do a joke about,
I'm looking at my Aryan face, that's what I'm thinking.
But it's like, it's a joke about looking like the other guys, meaning the Aryan thing, right? So I'm willfully playing on this stereotype and you know, profiting off that stereotype in the sense that I do that joke in club sets and I make money off that stereotype. But in my act, I've before this thing that's happening now really started to manifest in a really constant in your face way. Yeah, I was doing this joke in a few places, and there happened to be a few gigs in succession where people were saying things like, oh, you mean you have a big nose, or they're saying you love money, or like people were saying things like that from the crowd. And it's like, whoa. Also, in Edinburgh, there was a girl goes, because I was talking about not looking Jewish, and then I lost my train of thought, and then I said, oh, where was I? And then a girl in the front says, you were just saying how you're normal looking and not Jewish looking.
Oh, so wow.
There's like things like that, right? Which are, and the, you know, it's, you're playing on it on stage and it's all playful, whatever. But I'm like, okay, do I post about this and be like, this is a problem? This is showing the creeping anti-Semitism that lives beneath everything. But it's like, I invited it and I'm taking the piss out of myself, kind of. So I feel like this is all fair play in the world of comedy that we have in that room at that moment, to a certain extent. In terms of really hateful things that are said in a non-playful manner, I've not experienced any of that on stage. In fact, the opposite, if anything. So there was, since these things have happened, there's been some, oh, I'm Jewish. And then I'd say, if I'm in a cellar, I say, oh, I came down here to hide, or, you know, something like that.
Yeah,
which again is playing on the whole thing.
Yeah,
you know, and then I've got applause for that. You know, so I haven't really experienced in the stage setting any blowback that I haven't kind of manifested through the material that I'm doing, if you know what I mean. So that's why I feel it's a weird area. Like, I don't want to be posting about it and going, look what these people said about me, because it's part of the joke. I kind of encouraged it. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I was just thinking that literally a couple of days before this conflict began, you and I gigged together in Jersey, and it happened that the whole lineup had Jewish heritage. Like, it was you and I and Steve Hall, and we all mentioned it on stage, and it was a lovely warm room and a great audience. Like, the whole gig was fantastic. And I mean, I couldn't obviously have imagined what would happen when war broke out, but it was more that, like, a week later, we'd be, as a kind of Jewish comedian community, dwelling on what do we say, what don't we say? Like, is our normal banter going to work? Are they going to just stand up and scream us? Will they walk out? Are people going to not book us? Just like the professional impact of that, one extreme to the next in such a short space of time.
Yeah, 100%. What I wanted to say, though, in terms of my personal life, I felt a lot of repercussions in my personal life. So I have a buddy who is an Italian guy who was out of town for a long time. He's like old and doesn't have the internet, so he'll probably never hear this. But he messaged me. He's like, hey, I'm back in town. Do you want to get some beers and go to the march today? Right? Insinuating that, oh, this was the day of the big pro-Palestine march that was happening a couple of weekends ago. The big, big one that happened.
Right.
So I'm looking at it. I'm thinking, okay, he's casual. He doesn't know I'm Jewish, by the way, or anything. We never talked about it. So he's going, this is a party. This is a fun party day out. Let's go and we'll get some cans and we'll go and vibe out at this march. And I saw this and I was, you know, I don't want to, like I said, I don't want to swear too much, but I was like, it made me so angry. I was like, this is just a street party for you. And I wrote to him and I said, look, I'm, you know, I am Jewish, right? You knew that, right? And he's like, no, I didn't know, but you know, there will be Jews there as well. And then I said something quite bad back to him. We kind of had a bit of bad blood over, and he started sending me photos from the thing of Jews there. And I'm going, look, just because those Jews are there, it doesn't mean that, you know, I, you know, whatever, all that. Yeah, so there's been a little moments like that where there's a casualness of people around me taking up the cause as something fun to do. And I'm like, you don't know how much it affects me that you're looking at it like that. But then I think of, you know, the Russia-Ukraine, the other conflicts that are far from here, but that we are privy to, and that we have sort of bits of flurries of activism about, that I have been cavalier about. And I'm sort of like, this is a huge learning thing for me, where it's like the first time I've been like, oh shit, I actually have a dog in a fight for the first time.
Right.
But I think for me, that's the bit that really has struck me, that the people posting things are doing so with a very abstract connection to it, not knowing the people reading the things do have that dog in the fight, that someone who has no information except what they've picked up from social media, which is mainly being refuted anyway after a few days, maybe even a few minutes, but they see the first post and that's it, they jump on it, and that becomes their complete focus and attention. They don't care that their friends are reading that. They're not doing it with any sensitivity. I've heard of some people, I've not had this myself, but I have heard of some comics who've had people contact them offering sympathy empathy, asking for advice, and then posting the most horrendous things anyway, yet they feel they've done their bit because they've reached out. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of, I'm going to say, willful blindness in what people are posting.
It exposes the disparity between the hyperbole of social media and actual feelings.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, if your example just then is perfect. It's like, can you hold those two things, like those two things existing at once? So both, I have concern for my friend who's like, must be going through something, but also I am getting carried away, you know, being hyperbolic on social media. But it's like, you just wish that people would kind of become attuned to the effect that that has, like you say, 100%. And for me, it's like my experience personally is because I know quite a lot of lefties or whatever, you know, I'm being in the arts, and I'm sure it's the same for you guys, but being in the arts, I know quite a lot of people who assume my position on things is going to be the classic progressive voting for the quote unquote, who's perceived by the social media landscape as the underdog, whatever, all that stuff. They all assume that I have that viewpoint. So they come to me with, hey, let's go to the march. Like, are you going to the march tomorrow? And it's like, I have this problem. It's kind of more low stakes, but with people assuming that I like rock music, like a lot of people are like, hey, you, like putting on a you know, a 2000s rock band, indie rock band, and be like, don't you love this song, like the Killers? And I'm like, I hate this music, I hate it. Why do you, just because, you know, the way you just assume the way I dress or whatever, I don't know, the other things I do, you assume I like this? Yeah, that winds me up.
Okay, let's pause things for a second. What kind of music do you like? Because I would have definitely put you in that bracket.
Right. I can't. I don't know what I'm doing to give this out to the world. Sorry, it's a big thing for me. I have indie rocker energy, I guess. No, I like jazz music. I like world, like African music. I like Arabic music. I like everything except for this stuff, basically. But I grew up on jazz, and that's my big passion. And hip hop. Grime and all that. Sorry.
No, I was just going to say, you just need to like change the DJ I'm booking for your bar mitzvah party.
Yes, please do. Yeah. Take the Killers off the playlist, please. Ornette Coleman doing Have a Nagila. That's what I want to hear.
I feel like we've already answered the next question, because normally we like to check in with our guests and find out what's the matter bubbler. And I feel like we've sort of fed into it really nicely, because it's something that's so present, so immediate, that it's affecting how Jewish we are at the moment, but also, are we okay and what's going on? You're obviously welcome to dispute that and say, no, actually, there's something else I want to rant about. But it feels like what's the matter bubbler is a question we kind of should all be asking ourselves right now and each other.
Yeah, that's the matter bubbler. Yeah, just to go on about it a little bit more. Every day, like I'm sure with you guys, every day I feel this thing that's in the air. But it's also to the point where the rant, like my friend, for example, sending me those photos from the thing of the Jewish people and going, look, there's Jews there. Told you so. So you should be there too, kind of thing. You know, and I responded saying, I don't want to have this discussion over WhatsApp while you happen to be waiting for a bus. You know, this is something that needs to be discussed properly in a, like a focused sitting down kind of, now we're talking about this thing kind of way. And also what pisses me off is that no one's clear on what we're talking about. So I had another friend of mine, good friend of mine, who's bright guy, really sensitive, intelligent guy, who just started to tell me facts about Israel's military. And that was the discussion. Oh, they have this many tanks and they have that. So what are we talking about? Do you just want to tell me facts about a military, or what's the question you're asking me? Or like, what is this discussion about? What are we talking about here? Yeah. Rather than just spouting off your guys are bad because of this and this and this. Like, what is this? Where's this going?
But there's a flip side as well, because if people are saying to you, look, there are Jews here, you should be here. You could also say to them, look, there are extremists there, you shouldn't be there.
Yes, which I did.
And actually, it's really interesting, because loads of people are like, yeah, the extremists were only 2% of the march, but you were still there in that same kind of space, which means if you're saying Jews should be there because other Jews were there, that is exactly the same argument.
Yeah, of what you've done. It's true. Yeah. And like this guy, you know, this, my friend, like I wrote him a proper thing. And I was, once I calmed down and I was like, listen, the people associated with these rallies and stuff like that, they're doing this and this and this, basically like what you said, except without the interesting caveat, all this. And he's like, yeah, but there's going to be extremists everywhere. You know, there's always going to be bad eggs. It's like, yeah, but these bad eggs are like really bad. You know,
they actually want to kill us. Yeah, like it's not casual.
It's not just a salmonella. This is.
Yeah. Having said that, it's like, again, my conflict, my personal conflict is that I have let that go about other things, you know, other kind of, like I say, flurries of activism that have happened here in London that are not really directly related to the UK or whatever. I have let that go with other things. So that's why I'm saying this is my conflict, where it's a real learning curve for me. So
I find the Ukraine example very interesting, because the Jewish community not only did lots of activism for the people of Ukraine, but it's still going on. Like in Orthodox shuls on Saturday morning, we're still saying a prayer for the people of Ukraine. We've had a family situation, so I've not been to synagogue for a few weeks, and I went this week for the first time in about a month, and we have like every week a prayer for the royal family and the government. We have a prayer for the state of Israel that they should be safe and have wisdom, etc., etc. But there's still a prayer for the people of Ukraine. There was a prayer for the hostages. There's like a whole load of things. There were quite a lot of rallies and protests. There's still people collecting stuff for people of Ukraine, and to me that's also quite fascinating in and of itself, because actually the history of Jews in the Ukraine is pretty dark and terms of how we were treated, but you know, that's some time ago, and here we are feeling an empathy with what they're going through. So I found that quite fascinating. There's also been like big Jewish protests for things like the Uyghur Muslims, you know, etc., and that activism doesn't tend to include extremists, hate speech. It's just like, bad things are happening, let's be nice.
Yeah, bad things are happening, let's be nice. I'm going to get that as a tattoo above my butt.
My survivor grandparents would be thrilled to hear you getting a tattoo based off something I said.
Oh, do you know what? Here's a fun other Jewish thing when I was a kid. My mom wouldn't let me get, you know, if we had school runs or whatever, and they would write numbers on your arm. My mom wouldn't let them do that.
Why would they write numbers on your arm? They wouldn't like pin a thing on your back?
No, there was, I mean, this maybe only happened once, but I remember it. Is kind of a thing, but it was like, yeah, they would write on your arm just the whatever number you were.
They did the pin, the thing on the back for the non-Jews, but for the Jews, they did the numbers.
And they pinned a Star of David on your back. Yeah.
My friends, you were wearing that Star of David even without it pinned on your back.
Yeah. So yeah, that's what's bothering me at the moment, really, all that stuff. And it's actually been nice to get it off my chest.
Oh, good.
Yeah, you're very welcome. It's a service we provide. It's just we like.
It doesn't matter to me. I just don't want to pay for therapy.
It's an intervention. Well, as a Jewish mother, I'm always concerned about the welfare of my fellow Jews. And whenever I see any of you, I wonder, have you eaten yet? And you've experienced that quite directly every time we've gigged together, when I've provided you with food in Jersey. All the breakfast came for me and I believe half of your lunch. So, that was an experience of my Jewish mothering in real life. But do you have any particular attachments to like a specific Jewish food, or any memories around Jews and food you'd like to share with us?
Well, I worked in a Jewish deli. I was a manager of a Jewish deli in my early 20s for a couple of years. Basically, it was like a bagel shop. But it was like Montreal style bagel shop. So I don't know if you've ever been to Montreal, but Montreal has a really hardcore Jewish influence in terms of food and stuff. Leonard Cohen, Montreal Jew. So there's quite a few. But so chopped liver, Montreal smoked meat, which is like a classic thing. These bagels, which are like, they're Montreal style bagels. So they're like boiled in honey water and then wood fired. They're amazing. I was just living off them for ages. And I saw a photo the other day of me, someone took of me mopping there. I was very fat. So that was really nice. But lox, cream cheese and lox, challah bread. Yeah, we sold all that stuff. So that was like my diet for like a couple of years. Yeah. And that's still what I love. I was just talking to Aerophilia yesterday about Panzer's Deli. I want to go by there.
I've been there recently. I've never been there before. It's like, you know, when people are excited because they've gone off to Alton Towers or Disneyland for the first time. I felt like that about Panzers, just because people talk about it so much. And it is a really interesting space because it's almost entirely populated by Jews, but it's not a Jewish deli. It's not a kosher deli, although they do sell a lot of kosher products, and they make their own bagels and challah and whatever and all kinds of stuff, but also plenty of things that aren't kosher because it's not a Jewish deli. I genuinely thought it was going to be a Jewish deli.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
It's only Jews I know who go there. And I don't want to profile people, but I would say that out of the customers who were in there on the four or five occasions that I went in there recently because I was staying in the area, everybody was Jewish pretty much. If I would have shouted, who's ready for a minion, not the yellow thing, the kind of prayer thing, we'd have had 10 Jews lined up in a second.
Okay.
I think that's so, just them knowing their market, maybe.
Yeah, completely.
Because they're based in St. John's Wood. It's a Jewish but not heavily Jewish area, but they've gone, who's likely to shop here? The prices are reflective of the area.
They are.
Yeah. So you think they've come at it from that angle? I don't know. It was my understanding that it was like the only real Jewish deli in London. That's what I was told.
Oh, that is not the case.
That's not the case, eh?
Oh, Rachel's now going to do a spin-off episode about all the Jewish delis.
All the Jewish delis.
I'll take
that's
you.
That's a fun podcast.
But it's, I mean, half of the shop, well, not half, but maybe like a third, is an organic greengrocer.
And it's got
amazing fruit and vegetable. Like, honestly, amazing fruit and vegetable. If there's a random fruit and vegetable you'd like to try, they've got it, and all beautifully presented. And it's very rustic and lovely.
And they got that, like, Chinese broccoli, you know, the one that looks like Psytrance flyers from the 90s. Do you know those ones? Like,
I don't know what you're talking about, but I'd say yes.
Yeah, probably, yeah.
If anywhere had it, it'll be there. They have every color of tomato you can imagine.
Oh, nice.
I feel like they should be sponsoring the episode now, but it was an experience to go there.
I want to shout out also this place in Borough Market I just remembered called Shuk, S-H-U-K. Yeah. You know this? Mm-hmm. These guys? This is how my aunt is like, my aunt and uncle are like, in the Jewish community in Manchester so hardcore that they are best friends with the guy who owns that place, whose name is, I can't remember his name now, but I met his wife. But yeah, they do like that, these like Israeli wraps that are banging. Yeah. The Samich.
Samich.
Yeah, they're very expensive and the price seems to go up every month, but they're really, really good.
I love Sabich. I had some yesterday.
Did you?
That also feels like the most Jewish market stall to have in a non-Jewish market, because the word shuk is market.
Oh, right.
So they've basically gone, what should we call our market stall? We'll just call it market, which is everything. I'm going to the market. I'm going to...
It also sound fun and, yeah.
Yeah. You put something in Hebrew and it does sound fun. Mostly, don't look on Twitter for proof of that, but mostly it does. There's a place near us called Balagan, and Balagan just means mess. Everything's chaotic. It's a mess. But you call your restaurant Balagan. Food's fantastic.
Yeah, right. Do you speak fluent Hebrew?
Not fluent, no. I've got family there, so I've grown up speaking a little bit back and forth. I can understand a lot more than I can speak, but I've just got this weird thing where certain words really spoke to me when I learnt them. Shuk was one of them. I always remember the word for computer was machshev.
Well, that's a hard one to remember.
Yeah.
It's an interesting, because it's it kind of means the thing that thinks for me. That's what machshev means.
That's what I call my wife.
But in my head, shev is sit, and yeah. Mach makes sit. So you're made to sit at the computer, machshev, computer.
Machshev.
You know, it's such an illogical, logical thing in my head. Yeah. But when I learnt Hebrew, I was doing the vocabulary rather than the grammatical verbs and things like that. That's just how I remembered certain words. And some of them just really stick with you. And Balagan, Shuk, Machshev.
Balagan sounds like a town in Ireland.
Yeah. But also with Hebrew, they change the words quite a bit. So we always remember Kolnoa was cinema. Mm-hmm. You'd go to the Kolnoa. But now I think they would probably just say cinema or internet. There's no word for internet. They just put accents on it. It's internet.
Yeah. This is, I love it when languages do that, when they throw in a bit of the English. Because like, my girlfriend's Greek, and when you hear her talking on the phone in Greek, she'll be like, blah, 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 internet or something. And you're like, you guys didn't get your own word for that? Like,
so my primary school, we did Ivrit b'Ivrit, which means that we had Hebrew lessons that were immersive, like only in Hebrew. The teacher would only speak Hebrew the whole lesson. So when we finished primary school, we were all pretty fluent. Even for our school magazine, you'd have to write your stories to contribute from your Hebrew classes in Hebrew. So we were quite fluent. But then the secondary school I went to didn't focus on modern Hebrew. It focused on biblical Hebrew. So by the time I left to do my gap year in Israel, like when I finished high school, I spoke like Shakespeare. I couldn't really remember so much of the conversational Hebrew. So it caused hilarious moments until I kind of got my ear back in. But, you know, because I've grown up with it the whole time. I think I was surprised, like when I went into the world of work before deserting the world of work for the world of comedy, I was really surprised by how many people didn't speak a second language at all, like had no access to anything other than English. Even if they learned it at school, they didn't kind of focus on it.
Yeah.
My family, being refugees, was really like into languages and very linguistically able. My mum speaks, to an extent, I think about 8 or 10 languages. So I found that really hard to understand when I met people who just don't have any grasp.
Your dad still doesn't listen to her.
I'm going to play that to my parents because my parents love Philip more than me.
Yeah, classic.
In any language.
Because we travel so much, you know, we always have to go to Europe to work or whatever. And I'm trying to talk about this, my act a little bit. I've gotten like progressively annoyed. It's really bad. But you're just sort of like, can we just all talk one language? Like, I don't even mind like learning another one if that's like all we're going to do. Like, I just, why are we, because especially in Europe, which is so small.
Do you think it's like when they got the euro instead of their own currencies, there should have just been one European language?
Yes.
Yeah.
Euros.
Of the languages that they have now, which would you pick?
Well, Spanish, because it's the one I know the most of, so that I already have a head start.
Right.
Yeah, Spanish is also in the same alphabet. So, like, I've been learning Greek very, very slowly for the last 8 years, very slowly. But the problem with, like, learning that is, like, you have to learn the alphabet first, right? Which is actually kind of easy. Learn the alphabet, and then you can read the word, and you're like, you're sort of like, okay, I've done my bit now. I've translated into something else. But then it's still, you don't know what that word means. Do you know what I mean?
Right. So you're like, okay, my son's learning Greek now.
So you get all the sound, like you get the sounds and you know what you're saying, but you don't know, still don't know what it means. Now you have to do two translations.
But that's the same with Hebrew, because you've got Hebrew letters, then you've got the vowels, which are the dots and the dashes, and then you learn that, and then you go to Israel and they've taken away the vowels, so you've got to guess what the word might be, and then someone leaves you a little note to say they've gone to the shops, but they've written that in script, not in block, which is also very different and could be quite squiggly in the right. Probably a better word, calligraphic. I don't know, is that a word? So it feels there's different levels to learning. And I guess with English, there's capital letters and lowercase letters as well.
And italics.
And italics. But italics is kind of still bold, the same.
And underlined.
And strike through.
Yeah, learning strike through.
It just ruins everything.
My son is studying ancient history and they've had to learn Greek for some reason. We just had a test this week. So I went on Google Translate and I sent him good luck in Greek. And then he exactly what you're saying, that he could read the letters, but he had no idea what it was. So he had to Google Translate it back. And I thought that was quite funny.
No, Greek's really interesting, actually, because they had a couple of languages. So they had like a posh version of Greek, and then they had like the people's Greek, and then they only recently kind of combined them into one language, because like they only became like emancipated and sort of able to have their own culture like fairly recently.
Mm.
But this isn't a Greek podcast. Greek talking to me. Speak Greek.
It's all Greek to me.
I was just thinking that being someone reconnecting with their Jewish self and having a Greek partner is going to be very awkward come Hanukkah in a few weeks.
Yeah. Why?
Well, the Hanukkah story is all about the defeat over the Greeks who were forcing us to convert and stuff.
Oh, right. See, I didn't even know that.
There you go.
I'm the worst Jew. Am I the worst Jew you've had on this podcast?
Not by
I think I'm the worst Jew that's been on the podcast.
Are you?
Actually, yeah. This is
in many ways.
This is the most Jewish thing I've done. So
I know we went to Thessaloniki, which is in like northern Greece, and there's some statistic like it used to be 75% Jewish or something.
Famous, yeah.
And then they shopped all the Jews to the Germans. So in general, Greece is a country, really was like, they're over here. And so their Jewish population just tanked it. So yeah, they're not really allies.
I don't want to feed into the stereotype, but they got rid of all the Jews and eventually their economy tanked.
Yeah, just putting that out there.
Maybe we're better with money than they would have thought. Obviously, it's a very traumatic time at the moment. Everyone's arguing with everyone else about quite serious matters, to be fair. But we like the unimportant feuds in our lives, the bagel or bigel debates that really don't matter. But kind of
it matters
take
to
over
me, Philip. Life.
It doesn't matter, and it wouldn't matter.
Which one do you go for then, Rachel?
Bigel, the correct one.
Bigel.
Okay. She goes bigel. I go bagel. We've fallen out over it, but we've made up because she's a bigger person than me. Therefore, was able to.
You're calling me fat, Philip.
I wasn't, but if you are, is this really where the episode goes?
Now we got ourselves a feud. Woo!
Yeah.
No, do you know in Canada, a lot of people call it bagel. Like they'll go like, "Can I get a bagel, toasted bagel?" This is what I heard when I worked in the bagel shop many years ago. They'd be like, "Let me get a toasted bagel with butter." You know, yeah. Bagel.
I don't think I've ever been more angry in my life than I am at this second.
That's
See,
impressive.
I think even if I heard bagel, I'd want them to say bagel.
Yeah. You just want to. I mean, it's just such an, like, objectively, it's an obnoxious thing to say, bagel. Yeah.
It's a weak word.
My
kids say tringle because they don't want to upset my wife, who says bagel, and me, who says bagel. So they've come up with a new word, which is tringle.
Tringle,
I hate
okay.
that as well.
I don't know where it came from.
It's like Pringles, but yeah.
Oh, they did like Pringles, actually. Maybe it's that.
Maybe they just were trying to. Yeah, they just want you to give them Pringles.
So we wanted to know if there's anything, if there are any feuds in your life that you wanted to share with us.
Well, like I was saying, you know, what I said to you before was if somebody really pisses me off, they're dead to me, which is is kind of how I am a bit. Like I don't really do feuds, which I never really even realized until I saw that question. Yeah, I don't really argue with people. I mean, I don't like feud with people. I don't know. If someone disagrees with me, I can either justify it from their perspective, or if I can't justify it from their perspective, then I just, that person no longer exists in my life.
Which I have to say is probably the most Jewish response. Because it's like bagel, bagel plus, you know, you've gone, it's not going to be a feud. This person is dead to me.
Yeah. Yeah. They're in the
and
ground.
That very phrase, dead to me, already feels like the most Jewish thing anyway.
Right.
I'd love to hear it in Yiddish.
Well, quick, get Google Translate. We'll have it in Greek, in Yiddish.
Yeah. Kronos is death, I think, in Greek. Thanos. So it would be Thanos to me. It would be Thanos Stamu or something. Doesn't sound as intimidating, does it? Well, it's interesting. Thanos is like that's my girlfriend's sister's husband's name. That's like a common name that you have in Greek. This is how that's how melodramatic and Jewish they are in a lot of ways. Yeah, you just name your kid Thanos.
You just walk up to him and snap your fingers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, indeed. Running the Infinity Gauntlet.
You'll only get that reference if you've seen Marvel, by the way.
Which I've seen.
Rachel's looking bemused.
I'm just Googling dead to me in Hebrew.
Even like I'm always interested in like online feuds. Like I don't have the capacity to do that, to let go like that. Like to be able to like argue with someone on Twitter and then I walk away and like kind of live a normal life. I'm kind of like an angry person. So it's like, I have to really be careful about where I put that. Like how much I get invested in things. But it's like, because I get so volatile that I have to really kind of manage that. And it's not really a fun answer to that question, but that's kind of how I feel.
That's right. You don't have to have feuds. You were only Jewish till you were 8, so it's fine.
Yeah, exactly.
That's where the gap is.
Now I'm a passive-aggressive goy.
You can be a passive-aggressive Jew.
Really?
Sure.
Okay. If you
have
say
my
so.
Rabbinical permission.
Yeah, if that's what you want, Rachel.
I feel like I can hear children playing really loudly.
Actually, do you want to know something fun? A comedy fact. Ben Clover's, you know Ben Clover?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
His children might be some of the voices that you hear playing. There's a school across the street from me, and they go there.
Oh, that's excellent. A fun
fact. I'm glad you backed that up with an explanation.
This it's flat doesn't have a basement.
That's an interesting way to lead into the next question, which is to find out your 6 degrees of can't eat bacon. Who's your most interesting Jewish personal connection? So other than Philip and I, who have you got an interesting history with?
I think it's Philip and me.
Oh, sorry. Philip.
Then we go back to burgers.
Yeah.
Philip and I, you would say.
I'd say Philip and me.
That's not right. You're supposed to say I, isn't it?
Yeah, but if you take, in this sense, if you take Philip out of it, which I think Rachel is wishing she could do right now, but if you took Philip out of it, you would just say me.
Yeah, me.
Who is your favorite?
I mean, it's always fun to find out someone you respect is Jewish. Like, look, let me say my uncle, I'll say, because he's an interesting UK Jew story. So he's originally born and raised in Blackpool, but his background, his people are the East End Brick Lane Jews.
Right.
And then some of them migrated up to Blackpool. He comes from a very working class Jewish background, but he became a millionaire through ingenuity ingenuity, business acumen. And he can do this all day. But yeah, he basically started a kitchen and bathroom outfitting company from his garage in Blackpool that then he... Yeah, he just built it and became super wealthy. So he's a really interesting story. I like hanging out with him and hearing about his journey and all that. Yeah, and basically he started out selling, like buying cupboards and selling them out of his garage. And then just people started to, he got more demand for that. And then he opened a factory where they were building the stuff. And then, so he's an interesting guy. And then there's like, you know, which I'm talking about in my act now as well. There's like my dad who, when I was growing up, he was always really wired into the Jewish experience of suffering and you know, what we've gone through and what we've overcome. But then my mom kind of in later years is like, because he's dead now, but she was like, I don't think he was Jewish, to be honest. Like we think, I talk about this in the act, but we think he lied about being Jewish just so that she would marry him, because we didn't really know his family very well. But we met his sister, and my sister did a bit of family tree digging and found out that they were from Hamburg, and there's no mention or any record of Jewishness on that side at all. But he was always very like, yeah, we overcome, we are strong people. But it's like, it was just implicated that he was faking it, which is kind of funny.
Really unusual for someone not Jewish to pretend to be Jewish as opposed to the other way around.
Yeah.
But also shows a sign of the times, because back then you could say you were Jewish and the people were like, oh, okay, you're Jewish. Whereas now you'd have to have Facebook friends in common. You've gone to the same schools. You know, the way of tracing the lie now would have been.
Oh, like, yeah. Actually, not to name drop, but I was talking to John Cleese about this, where he was telling me about how his family his grandfather, whatever, their name was Cheese, and then they changed it to Cleese because he was getting made fun of so much in school. But we were talking about how, like, back in the day, you could just change your name. So my name isn't even Sheer. Like, that's not my real last name. It was Schreer, Schreer. And then my dad changed it to Sheer. So on his birth certificate, it just said he had the original one, but then he changed his last name to Sheer and just started using that. And then that became our family name. Yeah, you could back in the day just kind of be like, okay, I'm this now. It's quite fun.
I mean, there are definitely reasons people change their names. And I guess John Cleese is on the lower end of the necessity. You know, there's people who are fleeing pogroms and they wanted to mask their identity. Or maybe the people at Ellis Island in America didn't know how to spell or pronounce their names.
Yeah.
Even being bullied a bit because of a few cheese puns.
Well, my mom's last name is, she uses Lewis, which was her grandfather's first name. So they, when they came over from Eastern Europe, it was, I think, from Belarus or something they were from. But their last name was Grunowski. And then when he was coming into the UK, he couldn't speak the language or whatever. So yeah, he said Lewis. His name is Lewis Grunowski. So then he said Lewis is my name. Needed Google Translate.
I don't know whether to mention or not mention that I lived in Belarus, because it makes Philip so happy to say, do you talk to me, bingo? I thought it would be bonding between me and you.
I feel like someone could make a really good Wikipedia page about me after this.
Well, that's nearly all we've got time for, but how will our audience know what you're up to if you never call, you don't write? Normally, we allocate 20 seconds to do this, but for you, 30.
Yeah, so I've got a website, mikeshear.net. And if you go on that website, you can see all the things that I'm doing. So I run workshops on writing. I do stand-up comedy. I work as an actor. I am also a presenter. All that stuff is on there. And you can find me on IG at Mike Shear Comic. So it's two E's, Shear like the cliff drop. yeah, and in general, that's usually my name on things, is Mike Shear Comic. So you can find me on those things. How long was that? Is that 30? Did I use the whole 30? Oh, well.
Yeah.
Well, I've absolutely loved this. And from now on, I'll always think of Mike as the Jew who'll never order a bagel in Hebrew because it's all Greek to him.
Hey, very nice.
And as my grandmother used to say when she wanted to end my telephone calls, you must have better things to do than talk to me, and you must have better things to do than talk to us, which is a good thing. Sadly, we've come to the end of this week's show. We'd like to thank our fantastic guest, Mike Scheer. Follow him on social media.
Follow us on social media.
At Phillips Comedy.
At Rach Krieger.
At Jew Talking without the G.
Don't forget to subscribe, like, and share the show with everyone you know.
And join us next time on Jew Talking to Me. Jew Talking to Me was hosted by me, Philip Simon.
And me, Rachel Krieger.
It was produced by Russell Wolkin and judged by our mothers.
It was Russia at the time, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And then it later became Belarus. But you lived there?
Yeah, when my husband and I first got married, we lived there. And it had just stopped being Russia. And it had a lot of issues because of that. But that's all for another show.
You say another show. It's been mentioned in about 90% of these podcasts. If you sew those bits together, you'll get the whole story.
You should do a compilation video.
We'll do it for all of the bingo subjects for Rachel's card.
That would be fun.